Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Thursday, April 1st, 2010. The only April Fool's Day 2010 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this Thursday night edition of GKO. Glad to have you along for the ride wherever you are logging onto around the globe. We have a special guest tonight. We want to welcome future Hall of Famer, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, Mr. Dwayne Stats. Dwayne!
Who is this?
This is...
Fred, how you doing?
This is your friendly neighborhood talk show host.
I thought that perhaps you were channeling Harry Carey.
we'll bring up Harry momentarily, because you're always good for a good Harry story. But now I calculated, is this your 34th year you're going into announcing Major League Baseball?
It is, as unlikely a prospect as that seems. It would be the beginning of my 34th full year. That came up in conversation a couple of weeks ago, and technically it could be my 35th because I did one Major League game the prior season. So I've actually dabbled in it. This would be 35th, but it's my 34th full season coming.
Other than Vin Scully, is there a broadcaster who has a longer tenure broadcasting Major League Baseball doing it right now?
Oh, I'm sure there must be. I mean, you know, I've always felt that there are, you know, there have been so many really great broadcasters, and especially for baseball, it's so unique to a region and a locale that people who grow up with a certain voice and certain coverage of the game love that broadcaster, and so there are times when broadcasters tend to stick around a long time, and I'm just grateful that I've been blessed to stick around this long.
Of course, Dwayne started with the Houston Astros and then went to the Chicago Cubs and New York Yankees, did a stint with ESPN, and then has been the only play-by-play voice for the Tampa Bay Rays since their inception. All right, right out of the box, favorite Harry Carey story?
Oh, I'm not sure. Which is my favorite because there were so many.
Favorite that you can share online with the audience.
Yes, and there is that as well. But I tend to favor one that Harry allowed himself to be put into whatever place he needed to be put into, and it was still genteel enough that you could sell it in mixed company, and it has versatile uses. And one of them is if you're involved in a dinner that has gone on and on and on, whether you're the MC or whether you may be the last in a series of long-winded speakers, as I found myself this past October, I was at a dinner, and as it turns out, we had 10 speakers, and I was the 10th, and we had some who were quite verbose, I guess is the best way to put it. Anyway, you get up, and the audience has just about had it, you know?
Right.
And so I said to them, I fully understand that I'm the only person between you and the exit and the end of the evening, and so I will attempt to be brief because I know you're sitting out there asking how long must this go on, which leads right into Harry's story. When he came back to the National League from the White Sox and joined the Cubs, I was still in Houston, and there was a night before one of the games when we were sitting in the press room of the Astrodome, four of us sitting around a table, and Harry noted the date, and he said, "Hey, it's the 25th of May," which reminds me, it's the anniversary of the divorce from my first ex-wife. So he goes on to tell this great story about how he had paid alimony all of these years to his first ex-wife. And so he said, so in the last check I sent her, I included a note that said, my dearest Dolores, how long must this go on? And he said, I received back, in short order, a reply on very nice stationery, I might add, that said, my dearest Harry, till death do us part. Well, that was one of the great jokes that, and of a true life story, that is, that his alimony would continue that long, and so that's how long that this must go on.
Harry, of course, finished his storied career with the Cubs, and you had a chance to work with him at Wrigley Field and travel with him. Broadcasters can't do what Harry Carey did. There will never be another Harry Carey up there drinking Budweiser and Falstaff and talking about it on air.
Well, I'll tell you, and I think even while he was still working, he was probably the only guy in the only place where you could actually do that, because the business has become so corporate in so many ways that what Harry was first and foremost was a personality, a baseball personality. And I think the corporate structure, there are so many people who are concerned about true personalities, and part of it is not only broadcasting and maybe baseball these days, but society across the board. People have to be so careful about how they address any situation, and I think someone like Harry just scares the dickens out of most executives,
right,
in a corporate setting. And so I think it becomes very difficult for someone to be what he was, and I really believe only because, and while he was in Chicago, the only reason he was on the north side of town is because the Tribune Company had purchased the Cubs from the Wrigley family, and there was a gentleman by the name of Jim Dowdle, who was in many ways a kindred spirit, but he was the lead executive of Continental Broadcasting, which basically assumed control of what turned out to be Tribune Broadcasting, and he was four square in Harry's corner, and appreciated what he could do, and I think given the limits of even the Tribune corporate structure, without Jim Dowdle there, I don't think Harry would have been there at all. So it really was a situation that was pretty unique that allowed Harry to become as great an even greater personality than he already was before he came to the Cubs.
And he was quite a draw for the Cubs. People don't remember the days. I do, because I grew up in Chicago and spent a lot of time at Wrigley Field, when there were many times during the spring and fall especially where there'd be 5,000-6,000 people in that ballpark.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And as we know, the Cubs have been so bad for so long, and even when they're good, they tend to break hearts. And Harry, for the longest, was the show there. He had a great setting. There's no greater setting than Wrigley Field if you're going to tell a story and televise a live event. It's just a wonderful place to do that from, and Harry was the Pied Piper during all that time. And so when the Cubs would win, and when they, you know, when they won the division in 84 and again in 89, it was nice. It was a nice addition, an icing on the cake. But the event, I mean, Harry was so much of the event, there was no question about that.
He's Duane Stass, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. Hope springs eternal here in the Tampa Bay region with the coming of the 2010 baseball season. And before we talk about the Rays, Dwayne, I want to talk a little bit about the marketing of the team and baseball marketing in general. We talked about the fact that the Cubs forever did not sell out Wrigley Field for all those decades that they were mediocre at best. You know that I am a big guy on communication and the message that you're sending to the community. One of the things, you know how I got on my high horse about the name the Devil Rays when the team was announced here in 97, and ironically it was when they dropped Devil from their name officially that they ended up going to the World Series. The Cubs have a tradition of not only raising a W flag over Wrigley Field when they win, and everybody always sees the W flags that the fans bring both to Wrigley Field and the fans that support the team on the road, but they raise an L flag over Wrigley Field when they lose. And, of course, this goes back to the era when people would drive or ride by on the elevated train at Clark and Addison there, and they would let the team know if they had won or lost, as if having an L flag flying above your venue would allow them to know that they lost, as opposed to just not having any flag at all. So several years ago, I founded losetheLflag.com, and we had a petition online, and I did a bit with WGN Radio about it, and we got some activity going. And, of course, the Cubs were just bought by the Ricketts family from the Tribune for $800 million. And they actually had a survey, Dwayne, and a poll of Cubs fans. Do you want the L flag removed? And a majority of people said no. They wanted to keep that tradition. Now, you think that a new ownership group coming in, trying to send a message that while many of the traditions at Wrigley Field and with the Chicago Cubs are good ones, being the lovable losers and being known for that is not one that you'd want to keep, and that they could take a stand and make a statement immediately with the, we'll keep the W flag, we're not going to proclaim ourselves losers when we lose. There is not another team at any level of sport that you could name that when they lose, that they hoist a banner over their facility announcing to the world that they are losers. That says something about a franchise. And I think that
I think they should have left that decision solely in the hands of Lou Piniella.
You know what Lou would
have done? Gotten your way, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Of course, Lou Piniella, the former manager of the Tampa Bay Rays, and went on to take over the Chicago Cubs. He has changed a lot, seemingly at least on the surface, since he's been in Chicago. Do you think that the game has passed him by yet?
Well, it's hard to answer that question having not been with him day to day while he's with the Cubs. It's hard for me to pass that kind of judgment. In fact, I think Lou has been throughout his career a better manager than he sometimes gets credit for. And if people criticize him, it's not so much for the way he runs a game, because I think, when you put the game in his hands and you give him half a chance, I think he's pretty good at that area. I think a lot of people wonder about his demeanor in terms of how he handles the modern-day player, particularly maybe young players. And I don't mind some of that in a manager. It's kind of interesting because the Rays went from Lou Piniella to Joe Maddon, and in many ways they're on the opposite end of the spectrum. You know, before Joe Maddon won the pennant here in 08, and the last couple of years with the club has been better, and this year, obviously, I think this club could be better than the 08 team. Joe has deservedly gotten a lot of positive response and a lot of credit, but prior to that, there were people who were wondering if perhaps he wasn't too much of a player's manager, in which you allow, for a better lack of a better way to put it, maybe the inmates to run the asylum,
right,
and the clubhouse and so forth. And And I think if you're too easy that way, I think you run that risk, because players perform, as we all know, under a great deal of pressure because they succeed and fail in public. And there aren't a lot of us in our jobs who do that and then have people very vocal if you do fail. And writers and broadcasters tend to point out your failures. And so I think there are a lot of players who, given a chance to throw a manager under the bus and take advantage of a manager who may be too easy on them, I think that happens a lot. Conversely, Lou's approach was alternately a good cop, bad cop. You know, Lou is one of the most charming individuals you could ever meet, and at the same time, he could be right up front with people. And I think there are a lot of young players who didn't quite know how to take Lou when he would challenge them, and he always tried to make the point to them that, you know, he says, what I'm trying to do is make you a better player and make you a lot of money for you and your family. That's what I'm trying to do when I challenge you. And I don't disagree with that approach. Now, some people will say that approach is an approach of the past, and maybe the game has passed people by who think that. And so I don't know. I did see Lou, an interview with him recently where he brought that up and said, you know, people have asked because I've been criticized in Chicago for being too passive and maybe not engaged. He said, just because I don't go out and rant and rave with the umpire, it doesn't mean that that I'm not aware of what's going on. And I think as time goes by, there's probably going to be less and less of that. And I have to think that there are a number of managers who probably at one time were fiery managers in their in the middle of their managing careers, and less so later in their careers. And I think that's probably where Lou is. I like the idea that he can challenge players, and I think he can manage with any manager when you're talking about running a game from the dugout.
He's Dwayne Statz. We're talking with him tonight on Glenn Klein Online about the coming baseball season, and we're talking about communicating to a community, Dwayne, and the way that the Sternberg Group has taken over the Rays and changed their name and changed the uniforms and really branded the team with excellence. Of course, turning things around in 2008, winning the American League pennant before being ousted in the World Series by the Phillies. What is the atmosphere around the ball club, not just around the players and the coaches, but in the behind the scenes, the management, the administration? Are people feeling confident, generally speaking, about not only what's happening on the field, but what's happening in this community with this ball club?
Well, I think the answer to that is it's really a multi-answer that's required. I think with the club itself on the field, I think optimism is very high. I think it begins with adding a closer at the end so that you can put some order, some stability, and defined roles in the bullpen. I think that's very important. So having Soriano here, I think, is very important. And the rest of the team itself is so versatile and deep offensively. I think this is going to be a fun team to watch, and they're certainly going to be in the middle of the race with a chance to, even competing with the Yankees and the Red Sox, I think a decent chance to win the division. I think people say, well, you compete with that and you might be the third best team and not go anywhere, but I think they could finish first or second as easily as they could finish third with the Yankees and the Red Sox in this division. I think they're that good. So I think there's a lot of optimism there. I think from the business side of things, I think they recognize that two things. Number one, the community continues to be a work in progress for a couple reasons. One, there are a lot of transient loyalties here that they've spent time little by little converting, and a couple of seasons the way they've had recently in this kind of ball club helps that. I think in the greater Tampa Bay area, I don't think there's as great a corporate presence here as in some other markets, and I think that has to be recognized. And through time, the idea is that one would hope that there would be more of a corporate presence. For the life of me, I don't know why there isn't a greater corporate presence in Tampa Bay. I think it's one of the greatest secrets in the country in terms of a place to live. It's just the best in so many ways, and I think it would be a great home for so many corporate entities. And so I think that's a concern. The other one, of course, is the economy. And so given the realities of all of that, I think they've systematically tried to break it down. They've tried to break homestands down. Last year's attendance was up, but it wasn't what they had hoped for. They really felt that they certainly held their own in comparison with other clubs on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. They weren't as satisfied with what they had done on Friday night crowds. And so this year, I think their marketing aim is directed more toward that Friday crowd, thinking if they can punch the Friday crowds up to where they would like in terms of average or above average crowds, they think that in combination with Saturday and Sunday, they'd be pretty good. And then through the week, that will be another challenge. And I think we'll see probably this year similar crowds on, you know, a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or a Thursday. I think they would be disappointed if they didn't turn out greater crowds here.
How tired are you of talking about Tropicana Field and the need for a new ballpark?
Well, I think that talk is fairly quiet now, and I have been I enjoy Tropicana Field myself. I like the sidelines for the most part, and I like the fact that it's not the biggest ballpark in the world, so I like all of those things, and I think they've done a good job with the facility to the point that they can do one. I do think that this franchise would certainly benefit from a new facility, and I think the area would as a result benefit from it as well. The reality of that, it's certainly out of your hands and mine right now, and I really think to an extent it's out of the ball club's hands for a while. I think there's no question they would like to have one, recognize the need for one, and given all of the economic elements that are out there, I think they understand that they're going to have to be patient and hope for the best on that front.
We're talking with Wayne Statz, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, about the coming season and about baseball in general. The Rays got off to a very slow start after having won the AL championship in 08. Last year in 09, a very slow start. Are the players and Joe Maddon and the coaches feeling particular pressure to get off to a significantly better start so they're not playing catch-up all season?
Yeah, that was a design that when Maddon reflected on what happened last year, he felt that it was very important that this team gets off to a good start, and he thought that should start in spring training, and so far, so good. In fact, they've won 19 games this spring. They won 18 games before the 08 season, and so they've won more games this spring than ever before. But what I like about what's happened with this club watching them this spring, they have played as well as that record indicates, and they've done things that we didn't see as much of in 09 as we did in 08. The defense is better. They've turned double plays. They've gone from first to third. They've scored from second to home. And all of those were points of emphasis this year, things that happened with regularity in 08 that did not happen often enough in 09. So they really played very well. The at-bats have been better. We've seen some process and progress with a number of the guys who've been here before. And I think they've had some additions that helped this team, too. I think Kelly Shopik, the catcher they got from Cleveland, is going to be a bigger help than maybe the average fan would notice. He's a catcher. In his mind, he's a catcher first before he ever picks up a bat or gets a hit,
does,
or whatever. He's a catcher first.
Does Madden have him slated to start, do you think?
I think they're going to Joe's latest analysis of that is that he will play matchup with those two in regard to not only who's pitching against the Rays, but who's pitching for the Rays. And so I don't think you'll see a clear-cut number one catcher in that regard. I think they will share that position. And I think he's grown to be happy and confident with the way he's seen Shopik apply himself. And I think it can help, but be a positive for Deonner Navarro to have a guy like Shopik around who might not only help the pitching staff, but might help a younger catcher like Navarro. And that's an area where, honestly, Navarro, I think, I don't know if we could accurately say he needed prodding, but I think he needed developing in that area. And I think being around a catcher like Shopik can only help him.
Well, there's nothing like a little bit of competition, too, to help push
right.
Navarro. We're talking about catching. We're talking about a pitching staff. The Rays have one of the most talented young pitching staffs in baseball. And who are you impressed most with in that starting rotation?
Well, it's interesting because they, as you know, they have five young starters. Shields is the oldest; he's 28, and they really do not have a bona fide ace number one. Shields, for the third time, will pitch opening day next Tuesday against the Orioles. I think if there is an ace in waiting, it would have to be Garza. I think he has the stuff physically, and I think the maturing process the last couple of years will help him be a better pitcher this year. But in my mind, he's the guy who has the ceiling to win 18 or 19 or 20 games. And if he does that, then I think you'll see this club be even better than people think it might be. So those are the two guys coming in. Jeff Niemann, who had such a great rookie season last year, has had a great spring in terms of command of a number of pitches. And the David Price, you can't help but like a left-handed arm like that. And even Wade Davis will be the number five guy. I like all five of those. I think what they give you, while there's no one ace per se there, every night that they go out to pitch, you never feel as if you're at a disadvantage. You feel as if you have a very good chance of winning a game with those guys on the hill. And having said that, you asked me who I was most impressed with. And this may seem a little strange, but I was most impressed with a young pitcher who's going to start the season at AAA, and that's the right-hander Hellickson. I think, and it's unfair sometimes to compare young players and pitchers with players and pitchers of the past, but I was in Chicago with the Cubs and Greg Maddux came up, and there's a lot of Maddux in Hellickson in his approach, and the way he presents himself on the mound. It seems to me that when I've seen him pitch, the game never speeds up beyond him. And so I think Jeremy Hellickson has a chance to be a very good major league pitcher. And I think that's a positive for this club to have someone who can be potentially that successful to start the year in AAA and could very well spend most, if not all, of the season at AAA, depending on what happens with five good starters they have here.
Well, with the depth of starting pitcher, they've moved Danny Sonnenstein to the bullpen. And do you see him as being able to be as effective from the bullpen or more effective than he's been recently as a starter?
Well, I think, to me, the question was in that number five spot, and the battle was between Andy and Wade Davis. And if you had to send one to the bullpen, who had a greater chance to be successful in the bullpen? And I think Sonnenstein has a much better chance to be successful there than Wade Davis. I think it's important for Davis and his progress as a pitcher to be a pretty regular member of that rotation and go through that process of developing, to continue to develop and get that shot. Having said that, Sonnenstein has worked harder this past winter than I think he's ever worked in his life, which I think is a real plus. And I think he's better suited for the bullpen than Davis. Having said that, I think Andy was disappointed and would rather be a starting pitcher, and may very well be. It's a long season, and you know you're going to use more than five starters. As we know, he's not overpowering, and so command is very important. He's always been a good control pitcher in the minor leagues, but frankly, he had problems controlling his pitches, and basically comes down to command inside the strike zone, and that's what really hurt him. And he's shown signs of being better about that this spring, and I think part of that is he's in better shape, and he'll learn to pitch back-to-back days. He's done that once, maybe twice this spring in preparation for that. So I kind of like it. That's going to be a valuable role for this club to have a guy like Sonnenstein who can eat some innings if you find yourself with a starter who has an early exit
right,
for whatever reason.
Right. Well, that always happens. The Rays, Dwayne, have clearly one of the most talented young teams in all of baseball. Carl Crawford, we want to talk about him a little bit, but B.J. Upton had a down season coming off his shoulder injury last year. Is he as much of a head case as he is often portrayed in the media?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that work with him a year ago, and I think one of them was the shoulder that you mentioned. And to his credit, he never made that an issue. It was a recovering season for him with a bad left shoulder, but he never made that an issue, and so I was impressed by that. And then sometimes there was a lack of hustle that you could not be impressed with. And so I think it's a matter of maturing and understanding that, as you know, I know this is hard to believe, but at one point you and I were both very, very young, and probably didn't make as good of decisions when we were that young as we hope we have made later in life. And I think that applies to BJ the same way that applies to everyone. I think there's no question that there was an attitude situation in regard to his hustle. Okay, the interesting thing about that is that he's a very pleasant young man and was that way, and at times extremely quiet, but he can be very charming and, almost a retiring personality at times. And so there was never any of that sulking or those things that go along with someone who has a bad attitude. I just think that some of it was maybe the immaturity of youth. And we certainly have seen him healthy and invigorated this spring. And
we didn't really see much of the negative side of that in 08. Was it and the same thing? There was more stability in the bullpen and amongst all the pitchers. Did the Rays really miss guys like Percival and Floyd last year? Was there the veteran presence that there needs to be there to get after guys when they are lacking focus or dogging it a bit.
Yeah, and I think that's something that has not been around throughout the history of the organization as much as you would like. I thought that Cliff Floyd was very good for that team in 08. I thought Eric Kinski was a very good presence as well in the clubhouse. And I think you absolutely need that. And without those veteran players, and you know, both Kinski and Floyd had a measure of success here. You know, it was difficult for Cliff to stay healthy with the history of his knees, but they both had big hits and big moments for that team. And when you have a veteran player who can contribute that way, it gives him a license to do more with younger players than if you've got a veteran player who may not be having that kind of great year. And so I think that's a valid point, and one that if you look down through what is, relatively speaking, a short history, they've had some pretty good veteran players here and good guys, but they have not necessarily been the type of veteran that would take that kind of moral high ground, if you will, in the clubhouse and lead that way. And so I thought that when Tino Martinez was here that one year, I thought he gave some of that leadership to some of the young players. But, you know, it has been missing more than I think you would like to admit.
This is Evan Longoria's third year now in the big leagues. And is he going to be able to play that kind of role even this year?
I think he'll grow into that. I think he does to a point. I think he's a lot more comfortable of doing it by example. He's a guy, in fact, who gave Kinski a lot of credit for helping him get to the big leagues and endure that season, know what being a major league player was about. And those are the things where I think people help. And I think you'll see Longoria continue to grow into that role. I don't think there's any question about that.
Is there a player in Major League Baseball that has more of an upside than Evan Longoria right now?
Well, it'd be hard to think. You might find someone and try to argue a case, but you'd be pretty safe if you picked Longoria, because he's a threat in so many ways, and as great as he is offensively and will continue to be as a run producer, the first thing I noticed about him when he came here was his play at third base and his approach to defense and his preparation to be a good defender. And that is night in and night out, a remarkable performance at third base by Evan Longoria.
Who does he remind you of, Dwayne?
I said it's really unfair to talk about young players and great players then and try to compare them, but I did, even with him, briefly when I saw him, and I remember someone took me to task for that, but I thought Mike Schmidt was such a great third baseman, as we all know, and have seen him play third base the way he did. And when Longoria came up, Longoria made that play coming in, and a lot of third basemen will tell you that's the real test of a good third baseman, to come in and make that play. I saw him do that a couple times, and the image of Mike Schmidt popped into my head, and I just thought, what a compliment it was for a young player like Longoria, to his play at third base, to even conjure up the thought in my feeble mind of a player as great as Mike Schmidt.
Right.
But I really felt that way.
Well, you can build around a player like that, and obviously with this team having players like B.J. Upton, and Ben Zobrist had a great year last year. Carl Crawford, we mentioned, he's in his last year of his contract. Do you see any way that the Rays hold on to him?
Well, I would say that it would not be impossible. Pena's in that similar situation at first, and so's Crawford in left. I think their challenge is, I think they could, they could sign them, but are you going to add, are you going to invest so much in one or two players that now you're going to have a difficult time filling out the rest of the roster? Who are the other 23 players you're going to have besides one or two guys? And that's the position they're in. I think that's the economic reality.
Right. Well, as tough as it would be for Rays fans to see CC go, the Rays have often been compared to the Minnesota Twins. And the Twins keep seeming to be able to reload, lose a player like Torrey Hunter, and just be able to just get right back on the horse and compete the next year. So, but if the Rays are in this thing down the stretch, are they going, as opposed to what they did last year with Scott Kazmir, and we're really comparing apples and oranges, obviously, but do you think that they will keep Crawford throughout this season with the chance that they may not be able to trade him and get equal value if they're competing?
I think they're... Their attitude from the beginning has been they're confident that this team can win. They're confident it could go to the postseason. They understand that there's a potential for this team not only to win a pennant, but maybe be successful in the World Series. And so I think as long as that's a possibility, I think they will debate. It's always a possibility, I guess, and maybe the proper word would be as long as there's some probability in that. And I think that's going to be where they make that decision. And I think I can see them forming a committee, in the baseball office and in the business office, and trying to calculate the probability of this team actually doing that. And as long as they think there is a good probability that this team can do that, I think Crawford stays. Until such time as it's pretty clear that probability would be fading. But as long as it's not, I think that they feel like this is the year to pull out the stops, because they feel like they're so good that they could win it all. And having said that now, they've been pretty upfront about the economics of the club and where the payroll may or may not be a year from now. And I think, they will probably drop payroll, as Stu Sternberg has talked about quite up front. But having said that, and assuming that they may lose a Crawford, they feel that they have a young outfielder in Desmond Jennings who would be who has a chance to be another dynamic young player.
Yeah.
And again, could you compare him to Crawford? Well, that would be unfair to Jennings, but I think Jennings, if he stays healthy, I think will hold his own and be an outstanding major league player.
Well,
I think at the their other decision is going to be with a closer. They signed Soriano for 1 year, and assuming he has a good year, the chances are he may not stay because he's on a 1 year deal. But I think there's an arm at a young left-hander named Jake McGee who's going to start in the minor leagues. At least to begin the season, but I think he has left-hander and he has closer stuff, and I think you could see him develop into a guy at the end of the game as well.
There's been a lot of talk as we wind down our time with Dwayne Stats tonight. There's been a lot of talk, Dwayne, about moving the Rays to the Central Division of the American League. There's been talk about changing the schedule so it's more balanced like they do in the National Football League, where the teams that are weaker play a weaker schedule the next season. The problem, it's the classic catch-22 with this ball club, is that the Rays' success and having won the pennant recently and certainly being in a position to compete this year belies the concept that a small market, lower-range salary team can't compete against the Red Sox and Yankees. It's almost like the Rays are their own worst enemy.
Well, Well, they've certainly done a pretty good job of competing with those two clubs head-to-head. I mean, they play some great baseball with those two clubs, and while you're in the East, you know, I mean, they did prove in 08 that it can be done. They won the pennant and represented the American League in the World Series. I think I would be in favor of a schedule that was more balanced. I think when you stop and think that they play almost a quarter of their schedule, not quite, but close to a quarter of their schedule against the Red Sox and the Yankees, and compete as well as they do in that division, that's quite remarkable. And my concern is not only that, but the converse is that now you don't see teams from the other divisions in the West often enough come in here to develop enough familiarity with them to draw people. You know, there's some pretty good teams in the other division. I think Seattle is going to be a very interesting team, and through the years, the Mariners, the last 10 years or so, they have been a very interesting team. But you don't see them enough. When they make one trip and play three games in your ballpark, and that's it. Well, I think those teams should be making a couple trips in here.
What do you think the chances of baseball doing something like that to give the teams like the Rays and the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Kansas City Royals and the Minnesota Twins, the Oakland A's of the world, a chance to compete more consistently year to year, and to give the fans in those cities, I mean, realistically, there is a huge percentage of baseball fans that are about to start the season next week that know they have absolutely no chance for a pennant. That's not a good situation for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and you know, in a way, it's the same concept that baseball faces that the founding fathers of our great country tried to figure out. And in baseball, what you have these teams that have a difficult time competing. They should compete, and they should have the opportunity to compete. And you weigh that against big markets, particularly when you get to the postseason. You know, the ratings are higher if the Yankees and the Red Sox are involved because the population base that they draw from and serve as their fans are so much greater. And so the broadcast executives and consequently some baseball executives out of the Major League Baseball office, they never shed tears when those teams are in the postseason because they tend to draw the higher numbers. So how do you balance that with a fair situation? And you know, in government, our founding fathers figured out that, well, you should have two houses. You should have the Senate and you should have the House of Representatives, and divide the influence and power. And, you know, you give every district in the House has some representation, and you have only two senators then from states to try to balance that. Well, I think that's the problem that baseball finds, trying to find that happy medium somehow so that the Royals and the Pirates and all the clubs that you mentioned feel as if they have a fighting chance when the season begins. I think you have to do that.
Well, you know, they have the concept in Europe with their soccer where they have, you know, the different tiers of different leagues.
Yeah.
And then they have a champion, and then they make it into the playoffs. And I liked your analogy between the wisdom of the founding fathers. I don't think Bud Selig is going to be confused for Thomas Jefferson anytime soon. But is there any chance at all that baseball is going to do some sort of radical realignment now that they seem to have gotten a little bit of a hold on the substance abuse and the steroid situation, and now inching towards testing for HGH, putting that aside, and where baseball setting attendance records, do you think that there's any kind of momentum to make those kind of far-sweeping changes that would benefit the game nationwide.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging that that we're starting to see some discussions about that and some different plans. You know, nothing ever happens quickly in baseball. They tend to be very slow in making any kind of decisions, and that's the history of the game. But we have seen more, I think, in the last 6 months about that and actual discussions by the commissioner about that, I think, and among ownership. And I think fans and players and ownership, management alike, understand the points that we've been discussing here and that it's important. I mean, how many years in a row can the Pirates go and not have a, not only not win the division, but not even have a winning season?
Yeah.
The Baltimore Orioles are in a similar situation now.
Yeah.
So, you know, clubs go through that, and it's difficult. It's difficult to keep the fan base that you need to have to maintain a successful franchise.
Yeah, and if people who question the legitimacy of Tropicana Field and the attendance there, which obviously that location and that facility has its issues, but all you have to do is tune into a Pittsburgh Pirate home game. They've got a beautiful brand new ballpark, and that place is half empty all the time.
Yeah.
So.
And that's they have to have some success there. It's paramount that they have some success at some point, so that you know, the community and the fans can take not only pride but just enjoy seeing the home team win once in a while.
Well, our guest is Dwayne Statz, the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. This is our Glenn Klein Online preseason baseball preview. And, you know, I obviously am a big fan of yours, Dwayne, and as we've gotten to know each other over the years, talking to friends of mine and colleagues, I always hear this. What, Dwayne Statz, I hear two things. What a great head of hair, or what kind of hairpiece is that? And I always have got to reassure everybody that is the one of the great heads of hair in broadcasting history.
Well, I appreciate you taking up my my cause in that regard, it is what it is.
You just lucked out in the lottery of life, didn't you?
That's it. Well, in that area, maybe so, And really, and across the board, I've been very fortunate to do this all this time. And as you know, we've discussed before, it's something that it's allowed me to avoid working, because I love doing what we're doing. I don't think there's anything better than being in the ballpark and dissecting a baseball game and trying to have a little fun with it at the same time.
Well, you do a phenomenal job. There is no better and more informed play-by-play man in all of baseball. There may be guys that are equally well-informed and articulate about the game, but there is no better. Dwayne was nominated for the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2008, was it?
Well, you know, we do. We get some nominations in a way every year, which is I think it's good for the Hall of Fame's website, you know,
right?
Because they open voting and if you've been in the game long enough, you know, you're going to receive that nomination. But my take on that, and I'm always flattered anytime there's any connection with my name and the Hall of Fame, but there are many great broadcasters who are already there and many lined up to go there ahead of me, and if and when that ever happens, I'll be grateful. In the meantime, I look at the guys who are there and some of the guys who've been around a long time and are still active and very good, that it's a great fraternity to be a part of.
Well, I have never been to Cooperstown, and I am going to make that trip when you are inducted. That is coming in the future, my friend.
Well, You're very kind. I appreciate that very much.
Dwayne Statz is the voice of the Tampa Bay Rays. You can check him out all season long. For those of you that are not in the Tampa Bay area and get the MLB package, you will appreciate the fact that we are very fortunate here in Tampa Bay to have one of the great baseball voices of all time. And now, Dwayne, a team to equal a great broadcast. Your job is as much fun as it's always been. Must be even much more pleasurable than ever.
It is, because it's always much more fun when a team wins, number one, and because the team is so multi-talented, there are always things to talk about here. But when there's competition and when there's success, they make for great human interest stories and much more positive human interest stories. And at the end of the day, that's what a baseball season is. It's about competition and human interest stories. You win, you lose, and the ups and downs of trying to make a living at this game and be successful at the game. And it's an individual and it's a team effort as well. And so it's like it's an ongoing story every day from the beginning of spring training until they put the bats and balls away in the fall. And it's just a great study in humanity.
It's why we love baseball. It's really a great example of the need for perseverance and attitude and fortitude. And it's just such a pleasure to enjoy it with our guest tonight, Dwayne Statz. Dwayne, thank you. It's always great to check in with you, and I'd love to do it somewhere in the middle of the season, maybe around the All-Star break.
We'll look forward to it, as always.
And we will be in touch. Thank you very much, and give our love to Carla, too.
We will. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us tonight on this special preseason edition for the baseball season of Glenn Klein Online. Until next time, shalom, everybody!